Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Well, welcome to podcast number 7 from Near Miss Listen and Learn. I'm your host, John Tippett, Battalion Chief with Montgomery County, Maryland, and also work as a project manager for the International Association of Fire Chiefs, the organization that manages the National Firefighter Near Miss Reporting System. Joining us today is Jim Rist as the voice of our reports. Jim is a program coordinator with the National Programs Department at the IFC. He also has over 35 years of fire service experience in the volunteer and career departments. Jim's a life member of the West Haverstraw Volunteer Fire Department, volunteer hose company number 2 in New York State, as well as a retired federal chief officer from the United States Military Academy at West Point's Fire and Emergency Services. So we're pleased to have Jim with us today. And we'll also have Caitlin Obremski, who will be taking care of our commercial break. So this edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn is the fifth installment of our five-part series on crew resource management. These are issues that have been identified in near miss reports, and CRM becomes a significant component in the actions we should take in correcting some of our behaviors and changing some of our culture. Before we get too much further into this, I want to say a special thanks to Firehouse.com for hosting this program and providing us with the opportunity to get this information out to you. So special thanks to Danny and Pete Matthews there for their hard work. So today we're going to be talking about the CRM component of task allocation. This is the element of placing the right people in the right job, and it's a mix of preparation, planning, and time. So in our emergency responder world, these three elements can place a significant burden on departments that are strapped to deliver services due to increasing demand or diminishing staff resources. There can be a drive to place less experienced or untrained personnel into the breach, and that drive to get those people in place can be extremely high. However, I think we all recognize that using the untrained, the undertrained, or unqualified members to fill positions is just courting disaster. So taking the time necessary to properly train or only use properly trained members is the one way fire departments can do a couple of things, and that's keep their promise to the community to respond quickly and then also mitigate the emergencies and the calls for help efficiently. Today's reports can be found on the resources page under group reports on www.firefighternearmiss.com and on the firehouse.com website, Radio at Firehouse section. So just to quickly recap where we are, crew resource management is that force multiplying tool that capitalizes on the use of all of our resources, and that includes humans, hardware, and information. If you remember from our previous broadcast, CRM enhances the leader's role through the incorporation of a culture shift in the way you should lead. It emphasizes attention to five basic principles, and it's communication skills, teamwork, decision-making, situational awareness, and today's special focus on task allocation. The earliest mention of CRM use is in the fire service comes to us from the Campbell County, Wyoming Fire Department. You can contact the members of that department to talk to them about their experience. They've been using it as an operational principle since the mid-1990s, and it's continued use today. Some particular reading you might want to consider for further information on crew resource management is the CRM Management for the Fire Service text that was published in 2004, written by Tom Lubnow and Randy Ocray from Campbell County, Wyoming. And there's also extensive other articles and papers on the task and topic. So CRM originated in the mid-1970s in the commercial aviation industry. It was created to improve performance and mitigate the effect of errors committed in the cockpit. In a very recent event, the value of CRM was really underscored by the successful landing of U.S. Airways Flight 1549 on the Hudson River. Captain Chesley Sullenberger is credited with bringing the plane to a safe landing on the river, and Captain Sullenberger is said to be a student and teacher of CRM and one of the very first proponents of it, or early proponents of it, through U.S. Airways. There have been a host of other industries that have enthusiastically adopted the principles, and they report some significant performance improvements in their respective industries. One you might note is the United States Coast Guard reported a 74% reduction in injuries after implementing and adopting CRM. So let's talk about our focus this month. Task allocation is that principle of the right people in the right place for the right job. So getting that formula to work is going to involve intense training, an environment that supports the individual as they mature in their field, and a series of validated assessments to ensure training has been effective and learning has taken place. The best task allocation efforts results in, are in individuals who join with others to form teams that are highly motivated, well-skilled, alert to the consequences performance deficiencies can have, and then also know their strengths and weaknesses. So when task allocation is deficient, we know that performance problems become readily evident. So people can be placed in the wrong job for a number of reasons, especially in our industry. Some of those include a superior that may order a subordinate to undertake the task, and a subordinate is not prepared properly to perform the task that's assigned. We also have another interesting development in our field, and that's the subordinate that becomes overconfident in their abilities. They receive some training, and they believe that they are well prepared for a task, only to find out that when time compression is added or when some of the other significant impacts that affect us come to bear, they don't perform as well as they believe they could. So the results of such bravado can have some devastating results on the rest of the team and the team's performance. So one proven way to improve all our performance aspects is through the use of case studies and modeling, as we've done and demonstrated through the course of this series. The fire service is recognizing in a greater way that the value of this learning technique is something that we can't ignore and need to adopt and embrace completely. So as a result, we're also starting to see in our industry that firefighters are improving their knowledge bases and reducing the impact of error based on feedback they provide from listening to Near Miss Listen and Learn and a host of other opportunities that are provided at websites like firehouse.com. So just as a note, the narrator for the reports, our reader today, is Jim Rist, and he is not the report submitter. In some cases, the report has been condensed so that we can save a little bit of time. You're encouraged to go to firefighternearmiss.com and also radio at Firehouse to see the full report. So let's talk about our first report here. The very first report details an event that takes place between an officer and a firefighter in a station setting. It's report number 05-525. It was submitted by a captain from a combination department in FEMA Region 4, and the reporter was told of the event but was not involved. So I'm going to turn the phone over to Jim and let him go ahead and describe the event.
Event description. A veteran lieutenant serving an overtime shift at a station he never worked before needed someone to take paperwork from the current station to a station located 15 miles away. A volunteer asked permission to make the trip in a brush truck. The lieutenant asked if he was cleared to drive, and the member acknowledged he was. In fact, he was not. The lieutenant gave the paperwork to the member and sent him on his way. The untrained member, on a road full of curves, lost control of the brush truck, rolled it at least once, and fortunately landed upright in a ditch with water up to the middle of the doors. The lessons learned are, no matter how well someone is liked, respected, or otherwise deserving of praise, not all people are truthful. We try to consider each member of this department honest, and when words are spoken, we assume the truth comes out. We have issued a new version of ID cards now that clearly states authorized driver or no driving allowed. And the last lessons learned, above and beyond the normal EVOC and follow-up driver training, a new series of driving tests and operating procedures is now in place to ensure each and every driver is, without question, qualified to drive.
Thanks, Jim. As we take a look back over this report, a number of things come to light. And first and foremost, of course, we recognize that vehicle collisions are the second leading cause of traumatic death to firefighters. And this was an opportunity here that could have had some significantly tragic results. And, you know, we can't over or underemphasize the fact that a piece of equipment was probably damaged here. So one of the other points when it comes to task allocation is to concern ourselves with personnel familiarization. The report notes that the lieutenant was not assigned to that station and was not familiar with all the personnel. There are certainly some significant challenges in working in that assignment, and all of us, I think, through the course of our fire service career, have spent some time in some fire station somewhere where we didn't necessarily know the qualifications or capabilities of everybody we were working with. So some of the strategies to overcome that are checking with others who do normally work in that station. And then a particular note here when it comes to task allocation was the department's response. They reacted to the event by taking the step of assigning new ID cards that do stipulate what a person's capabilities are, driving or non-driving. If you take a look at the NFPA standards, you'll see that there are recommendations in there for helmet colors to sort of set people apart so you can identify what people can and can't do. And this is just another way that we try to find means or try to find methods or mechanisms to get people in the right categories so they can do the right job. So our second report for today's edition is report number 05-421. It was submitted by a lieutenant in the career department from FEMA Region 4. And in this case, the reporter was involved in the event. I'll go back to Jim now.
Event description. Due to the aftermath weather of Hurricane Dennis, our community received major flood damage. Our specialty rescue squad answered several water-related calls in the surrounding area in agreement to our auto aid dispatch. On one incident, a dead-end road development was flooded under the cover of morning darkness. About six homes were eventually consumed from a nearby river's overflow. Nine residents had to be rescued from the homes. Water, 5 feet deep, rapidly flowed down the street between these houses. Our swift water technicians assisted the local jurisdiction's rescue teams that were already in operation. The initial responding engine company made a decision to attempt water entry to evacuate nearby homes. This crew's level of training is unknown, but it was apparent they were not trained in swift water rescue. The crew had entered the water wearing a Type 5 rescue PFDs over full turnout gear. One of the personnel soon became trapped inside a house by rapidly rising water. This firefighter was eventually rescued by boat after the residents were taken to higher ground. Self-rescue would have had little to no risk if the chest deep water, without the turnout gear. Wearing full turnout gear near the water's edge with no fire hazard, I feel warrants a near miss. The lessons learned are, and there are two. The first, every swift water training class and experience I've had expresses and justifies the dangers of wearing turnout gear near the water's edge. If equipment is placed on the apparatus with untrained personnel, safety may become secondary to the feeling of helplessness. And the second, to prevent this, proper full training is recommended. If it is unavailable, awareness of the hazards must be a training priority.
Thanks, Jim. As we see from our second report here, the compulsion to act or the duty to act that overrides a lot of our activity comes into play where fire and rescue services are called to assist in a particular event. Apparatus is well equipped, but we don't know the actual training capacity or training capabilities of the people that are involved in the incident. Many times we'll see across the country where flooding occurs, firefighters dressed in protective clothing, their structural firefighting gear, mainly to protect themselves from the weather. And they take the PFDs and put them over top of their turnout gear, which really leads to a false sense of security. Once your pockets and boots and whatever else you're carrying fills up with water, it makes it that much more difficult for the PFD to do what it's supposed to do as far as buoyancy, and you find yourself in a troubled slot. So one other thing we can do when it comes to task allocation here is make sure that the members of the department have a validated training and certification program. The second thing that they can do is recognize what their limitations are, that we can truly show up at events and say that we're not ready for this. And even though we may be compelled to act, we have to recognize that there are limitations to what we can do. There was a tragedy in an area near the Washington, D.C. area where two firefighters probably 35 or 40 years ago attempted a water rescue where they tied ropes around their waist. They both ended up dying when the ropes were constricted and ended up suffocating them. The last thing we can do is when we see things that are not correct, that are certainly not necessarily violations, but they're errors that are being committed. But even in the case of violations, if somebody speaks up when they recognize that they were going down the wrong path. Each of these types of conversations that we're having all relate to all the other elements of CRM, and they all come together to form the tool that we can use to avert error. Well, we're going to take a short break here. I'm going to turn the system over to Caitlin to tell us a little bit about a few things coming up in the IFC world.
Come to the 2009 Wildland Urban Interface Conference to meet with John Tippett, Program Manager of the National Firefighter Near-Miss Reporting System. This conference is timely as there has been much wildfire devastation throughout Australia and much of the United States this season. Don't miss your opportunity to learn operational best practices, innovations and procedures for preparedness and response, network with wildland policy leaders, and earn credits and certifications. Stop by the Near Miss booth, number 713, to speak with John about the Near Miss program and how you can share your Near Miss experiences with the rest of the wildland community. The 2009 Wildland Urban Interface Conference takes place March 22nd through 26th in Reno, Nevada. For more information, please visit www.iafc.org/WUI. You can also download a primer on the CRM and the PowerPoint presentation from the resources section of www.firefighternearmiss.com. Visit the resources page of www.firefighternearmiss.com for new photos linked to Near Miss reports. We have been receiving more reports with photos. The photos provide exceptional adjuncts to the Near Miss reports.
Thanks, Caitlin. And just to follow up on the photo section, more and more fire departments and firefighters are submitting photos with their near-miss reports. And we just want to let the fire service community know that we make every effort to de-identify the reports and remove any identifying marks or notations on the photos, that is, so that they couldn't be linked back to a specific department. They get the same confidentiality and anonymity practices as the report themselves. Well, let's take a look at the second half of our program today. We're going to look at the next report is 09-58. It was submitted by a firefighter from a municipal fire department in FEMA Region 8. And in this case also, the reporter was told of the event, but they were not involved. Jim?
Thanks, John. Event description. We responded on a second alarm for a single-family structure fire with crews on scene. There were heavy fire conditions and slight wind-driven fire spread. Upon arrival, it was not stated, but visually obvious, that the on-scene crews had gone into a combination attack. They were using a 100-foot aerial device flowing water into the rear of the structure. An engine company of four was told to make entry on the ground level through the front door and to continue fire attack by a district chief. Fire conditions. The rear half, all levels, were fully involved. The roof was missing on the rear two-thirds. It's a two-story with a finished walkout basement. The front door, porch, as well as a three-car drywall garage with two bedrooms over the garage appeared to be intact. The fire attack was made through the front door by two firefighters, with the other two feeding hose into the structure. Visibility was poor due to smoke and steam conversion. The nozzle team advanced approximately 30 feet into the structure when the nozzleman's foot stepped through the floor up to his groin. The backup nozzleman helped free him, and the two quickly retreated to the front door. The lessons learned are, when arriving on scene, have at least one of the crew do a 360 walk around. Number two, do not blindly follow directions without questioning orders. Number three, when working above the fire, have a strong suspicion of overall task benefit. Number four, when arriving later into an incident, make sure all crew members are aware of current operational tactics. And the last, all crew members should have an evolving situational awareness of fire/operational changes.
Thanks, Jim. As we take a look at this particular report, we'll notice that there are a number of things that come into play here. From the officer's perspective, firefighters are trained to follow orders. One of the responsibilities we have as officers is to make sure that those orders are clear, they're concise, and they're consistent with a good task, a benefit evaluation. We take a look here at the nozzle team's experience. They moved approximately 30 feet into a structure. They may not have been aware of everything that was going on around them, but they're doing exactly what they're told. So from the task allocation perspective, they're performing well. One of the things they recognized once their foot went through the floor was that that it was time for them to back out. The one question becomes, did they notice that the floor was soft up to that point, or were they operating over a floor that was very well constructed and they just found a soft spot in the flooring itself? So one element that we would want to emphasize here is that as part of your task allocation training, you talk to your members about situation assessment, make sure they're looking all around them. They want to evaluate just how far they do follow orders. When they get that sense of impending doom or that things are not right, that they should be considering backing out. And we also note here that in this particular report, there's mention of situational awareness, teamwork, decision-making, and communication as an example of how all the reports and all the elements of CRM come together in just about everything we do. So we're going to take a look at one more report for this episode. This is going to be report number 08436. It was submitted by a fire chief from a combination department in FEMA Region 4. This reporter happens to have been involved in the event also. And the report, this report, because of its length, has been edited just to focus on the task allocation aspects. Jim?
Thanks, John. Event description. Dispatched to a reported tree down, blocking the entire roadway. There was a wind advisory issued the night before, in effect from 0700 until 1600 hours with wind speeds at 25 to 35 mph and gusts up to 45 mph. I was the command duty officer and was out in the district in a staff vehicle. Two personnel were at the station as the available duty crew. When I checked responding, I advised Central Dispatch to notify the county and state highway department of this incident and dispatch them to the scene. This was the first tree down of the day, but certainly would not be the last. I responded in the staff unit and our rescue truck responded, both units non-emergent from Station 1 with two personnel on board. This incident was approximately 8 miles from Station 1. Upon arrival, we found a large tree, approximately 18 inches around at the trunk, with a lot of branches and limbs, and another smaller tree with vines that was pulled down with the larger tree. The tree was resting on the guardrail, and the base of the tree was below the grade of the road. This left the tree suspended in the air as if it were a standing tree. Central Dispatch advised me back that they could not make contact with the County Road Department or the State Highway Department, and that other fire departments in the county were out clearing trees. Therefore, here we are with a major road in our area blocked completely. travel around using other streets and roads would average 30 minutes. The county sheriff unit isn't willing to remain with the tree to control traffic, plus the location would probably be more of a hazard to citizens if we just opened the road to one lane for emergency vehicle access. Just opening one lane of the road would require an emergency worker to be placed in harm's way for a longer period of time directing traffic. The decision was made to use our resources to clear the roadway. We had a county sheriff unit on scene with traffic blocked from the north, and we used our rescue unit to block traffic from the south. There were no power lines in the area, and traffic was blocked by parked units. We had helmets with eyewear, gloves, and bunker pants with bunker boots. We began to clear the smaller branches and limbs from the tree. Once the tree was clear to the trunk and good access was made to make the cut on the tree at the guardrail, it was time to fell the tree. I used the chainsaw to begin the cut. The chainsaw couldn't have been more than 3 inches into the tree when the trunk splintered and sprang up violently. The main part of the tree went straight down onto the roadway, and the splintered part of the trunk sprang directly up, still remaining attached to the base of the tree trunk. There were no injuries that occurred, and no equipment was damaged. The other two personnel on the scene were clear of the tree and watching the cut be made. I then made the cut up from the bottom side of the tree and completed the cut. We completed our assignment and returned to service and quarters. Thanks to training on how to use the new chainsaw and how to fell a tree, injury was avoided. The safest way to avoid injury to us is not to be placed in these situations and allow other departments with the responsibility to perform such tasks. The lessons learned are: the first is training on new equipment is essential, no matter how simple you think the piece of equipment is. The second is training on the task assigned to your organization. Situational awareness for all personnel on scene, policy decisions on what is our responsibility. The third lessons learned: the best way to prevent a similar situation is to deploy policy that says our department does not respond to trees in the roadway. Agencies with proper equipment and personnel should be utilized to perform tasks associated with these hazards. However, in rural settings, the road could be blocked for hours. That is the argument used to keep us responding. I would argue that if the street and road departments were prepared to respond to such events, the road could be cleared quickly, the scene mitigated, and the debris cleaned up when they were there. In the current system, the call goes to the fire department and police department or the sheriff department units. We simply open the road and throw all the debris into a ditch. And then when normal work hours roll around, the street and road department respond back to the same site and clear up the debris. I argue this places more public workers in harm's way for an extended period of time when it could have been taken care of with fewer personnel and less exposure the first time. The last lesson learned is policy decisions and departmental cooperation is the key. These issues can be resolved as long as focus on service to the citizens remains the priority.
Thanks, Jim. Well, that's going to wrap up the four reports that we took a look at for this edition and talking about task allocation. The fire chief in this report points to the dilemma that fire and emergency services are faced with in times of storms. And coming on the heels of the storms that blew through from the Midwest and the high winds that are now affecting the East today are another good example of being put into these situations. Just about every resource is strained at the time when these events come through. Governments will say that they just don't have enough money to be able to maintain peak efficiency and equipment and performance at all times for these time-sensitive events. So we, the Fire and Emergency Services, are thrown into the breach and expected to take action and take some sort of action that will help restore order to the community. The consequences of those decisions lead to the submission of things like near-miss reports, which definitely puts us on alert in the future for how we should face these events. What you do in your own community is going to be a decision between you and your local cooperative groups, police departments, sheriff's departments, public works. All those people will come into play here. When we focus back on the actual work of task allocation within the fire service, we know that assigning tasks should be based on some building blocks of intense training, an environment that supports the individual as they mature in their field, and a reminder again of a series of validated assessments and frequent retraining to ensure that there's effective learning taking place. The task allocation of component of CRM is the last element that we're going to talk about with CRM, but it is by far not the least important. It's essential to solidifying groups of individuals as they work towards making effective teams. We recognize that when task allocation is deficient for whatever reason, whether somebody is undertrained or they're placed in a situation they're not prepared for, that performance suffers, the probability of injury or worse increases, and at the very least, teams dissolve into non-functioning groups that are ripe with conflict. The officer in any one group can improve the task allocation skills when assembling teams from organizational norms by asking those individuals about qualifications and comfort in performing tasks. So as you assemble for your emergency or in advance of that emergency, of course, you'll want to get to know the people that you're going to be working with that day. Take a quick assessment at that kitchen table when shift changes, especially if there's an unfamiliar face or if you are the unfamiliar face. Get with the officer or the crew and have an exchange about who can do what best in a particular situation. When an individual comes up and expresses that lack of confidence in performing a task, officers need to make an informed decision about whether or not to push the individual to complete the task if they're aware that the individual has the training, which could boost the member's confidence, or make sure they provide an environment that provides additional training and reinforces or builds that member's confidence. This decision, of course, is based on the officer's observation of the individual's performance or the knowledge of the individual themselves. If you happen to be a newly promoted officer, this is a great time to feedback on the lessons that you learned as you were coming up through the ranks. Think of the people that mentored you and the times when you were in those situations so that you can develop the knowledge, skills, and ability or use or capitalize on those in order to put the right people in the right place. There are a number of sources that are out there for obtaining information about an individual's performance capability. There are certainly training records that are available in departments. You can talk to the individual's instructors. I know in my own department, when new recruits are graduated and sent out to the field, a training report is sent from our academy to the field. If your department is smaller or if you're sending your members to regional training academies, ask that academy for a report on their performance. And then you can always talk to a peer and find out what they know about the individual. Since we typically operate at an information deficit in our emergency situations, it's really imperative that task capability be removed as an unknown prior to the emergency. So again, just to reinforce the point, get to know people before the bells ring and before you get out on the street. If you as an officer sense that an individual or if you as a crew member sense that there's someone that's shying away from things or doesn't have the capability that they contend that they have, then you should go with your gut feeling. There's probably there's emerging information out there that our intuition is probably one of our most powerful assessment tools for everything we do, whether it's assessing people, emergency situations, or anything else that we're faced with. Well, that's going to conclude our edition of Near Miss Listen and Learn. The topic was task allocation. So until next time, be vigilant, stay focused, and listen and learn. Thanks for stopping by.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these, or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.